The Northern Waters Land Trust is a nonprofit conservation organization that works to protect water quality and preserve environmentally sensitive lands and water resources. They serve the watersheds in Cass, Crowing, Hubbard, and Aiken counties of Minnesota. Joining us now, Annie Johnson, the Grants Manager and Conservation Specialist, John Sumption, Land Conservation Specialist, and they have brought a guest with them. First of all, doesn't it feel like 2 days ago we did this conversation?
It does.
Time is going fast.
John, I got to tell you that watching the national weather news this morning sure made me glad for it to be only 27 below.
Well, there are some places that are probably warmer than that, but for the people who live there, the difference between what they expected and what they got was, you know, we're expecting 10 below and it's 30 below, so that's only 20 degrees. But if you expect 70 and you've got 4,
yeah, snow on the beach in Brownsville, Texas.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, my sister lives in Austin, and I posted a picture on our Season Watch page today of her backyard, and there's a snow-covered juniper tree, and there are a dozen or more robins in there, and they all look like about the size of a grapefruit. They are just, they are swollen with their feathers out, hoping that things will warm up soon, and my sister, I would count among that group.
So, Annie, I wonder if you would introduce us to your guests. It's been fun to have these monthly conversations where we learn a lot about the work you're doing, but also about how things we don't think of have a lot to do with how the climate is changing.
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit of background information. So since 2014, Northern Waters Land Trust, we have received grant funding from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for our main grant program, which is called the Clean Water Critical Habitat Program. And it's a program that focuses directly on research regarding the importance of conserving Tulibi and Cisco refuge lakes. And then with that research, we've been able to protect property and land in this area through conservation easements, fee title acquisitions, as well as provide community outreach and educational resources for the people living in this area. And today is a special day because we get to talk to the mastermind behind this Tulibi refuge research. His name is Pete Jacobson. A little bit about Pete here. He joined the staff at the Hubbard County Soil and Water Conservation District back in May. He's recently retired from the DNR fisheries, where he was a fisheries scientist for 32 years in Detroit Lakes and Park Rapids. Pete was heavily involved in developing methods for protecting water quality and fish habitat in lakes across the state. The research that he and others completed showed that excellent quality water quality can be maintained in lakes that have at least 75% of their watershed in forested cover. That recommendation is being used in many lake and watershed protection efforts throughout the state, like ours at Northern Waters Land Trust. So Pete's research on tulibies has also formed the basis for water quality programs for deep and clear lakes around the state. So we are really happy to have Pete with us, and we'll turn it over to Pete so that he can fill our brains with knowledge about tulibies.
Sure, great. Thanks, Annie. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, so Pete, do you want to just tell us basically what is a Cisco?
Well, a Cisco and a tulibi are the same fish, Craganus artidae. It's a cold water fish. It's a fish that lives deep, and it needs real cold oxygenated water, and it only lives in lakes that have really good water quality and really good oxygen down deep. So they're very an interesting fish to actually study because they are so sensitive to things like climate change and water pollution. But they're also very important for our lakes. Lakes that have really good Cisco or tulibi populations have excellent growth rates for walleyes, northern pike, muskellunge, and even lake trout up towards the boundary waters. So they're very high energy, kind of high oily kind of fish, and they make just wonderful forage. And that's why we were so interested from a fisheries point of view in that fish.
These sound like the sort of fish that my wife would be not wanting me to eat, like no bacon, no Ciscos, no tulipies. Got to stick to the lean.
Yeah,
but if you're a northern.
Yeah, no, they're actually very good smoked, and a lot of people net them in the fall or catch them in the winter, and because of that oiliness, they hold smoke very nicely.
Yeah, I have netted them and smoked them myself, so I know how delightful they are. Having worked with these fish, you must know about the interrelationships, and you talked a little bit about that. Maybe you could explain a little bit more why they are so valuable in a lake in terms of the forage for other fish.
They really are. Our walleyes and northerns, they can do fine on yellow perch, which is the main forage in most of our lakes, and they can get up to 4, 5, 6, even 8 pounds on yellow perch. But to get a 10 and 12 pound walleye, you really need those high energy Ciscos, and the walleyes seem to switch to that diet as they grow bigger. So that's where they're really important. But it's kind of interesting. They're important for more reasons than just fish. They live in some of the nicest lakes we have in the area. Those really deep, really clear lakes with a lot of sand and gravel, just some of our nicest lakes in the state. And because they are kind of that sensitive indicator species, it's really a good bellwether of how our lakes are doing. So it really is more than just fish. And the conservation work that organizations like Northern Waters Land Trust is just a wonderful thing. You know, we have some really special lakes in this part of the state, in this part of the country. We have one of the finest lake districts in the country, and it definitely warrants the conservation efforts that groups like Northern Waters Land Trust are putting out there. So thank you.
I have a question about these wonderful Clearwater lakes that we're talking about. How is it that they are able to have oxygen levels that are high enough to support life at these depths? And what's the relationship there? How does that lake become? Because some lakes have the depth, but they don't have the oxygen. So how does that happen?
That's exactly right. And the reason is those lakes have good water quality. So what happens is when you have a lot of nutrients and sediment coming into a lake, that promotes the growth of algae, and specifically a lot of the microscopic phytoplankton type algae that's all floating in the water. When that dies, it kind of rains down into the deep water. And as it decomposes, that's what sucks oxygen out of the water. Okay. And below the thermocline, which is that sharp change in temperature between the upper warm waters and the deep colder waters, that oxygen down there is locked away all summer. So what you get in the spring after the spring turnover is all that lake is going to get. So you don't want a lot of organic matter raining down into those deep waters. You want to keep that oxygen level high. And that's why those deep, clear lakes are just so critically important to provide that cold water habitat for a fish like a tulipy.
Can you create that kind of oxygenation by, say, if you had, like, in the boundary waters, oftentimes you have like a waterfall that leads into a lake. Can that sort of help that, or is it not that, is that an insignificant amount of oxygen?
That helps the upper parts of the lake, the surface waters. Usually oxygen isn't an issue, because every time the wind blows and the wave mixes those upper layers, you're getting oxygen back in that water. The trick is below that thermocline, which is locked away and where the deep waters have that cold water. That is not benefiting from waterfalls and wind action. That simply is at the mercy of how much oxygen was put there during spring turnover. And it's critical to maintain it all summer long.
Amazing. You are probably familiar with my swim partner, Rod Pierce, who worked here in Grand Rapids for many, many years.
Absolutely.
We swam Rod together. Yeah, we swam together for 25 years, and he studied Northerns. And I know that the relationship between the Ciscos and the Northerns is a critical one. And they also have preferences for oxygen levels and temperatures, and they seek out those places where they feel the most comfortable. Are those areas becoming more difficult to find?
They are. And unfortunately, with climate change, we're seeing earlier springs and later falls, shorter winters. You know, it may not feel like it this winter, but the trend is definitely earlier springs and later falls. So the amount of time that deep cold water is locked away under that thermocline has gotten longer in recent years. And the problem with that is that oxygen is in slow decline over that entire spring, summer, and even going into early fall. As you lengthen that period that it's locked away, you're going to end up with less oxygen down below the thermocline in the deep waters. And we think we're seeing that across a number of lakes in Minnesota, and that's concerning.
Do the lakes only turn over, I'm just going to say, once a year, or are there conditions that might be met that would allow a lake to turn over more often than once a year?
Our deep lakes turn over twice a year. They turn over in the spring as soon as the ice goes out and the wind starts blowing, and then they turn over again late in the fall after the water's cooled down enough and completely mixes the water. So for our deep lakes, that's it.
Just twice.
For shallower lakes, for a lake like the main part of Leech Lake, that the wind can really blow and it's not quite as deep as Lake Walker Bay, that will drive that oxygen all the way to the bottom and under real windy conditions. So some of those medium depth lakes, it can mix at various times through the summer, but most of our deep lakes, it's twice a year.
What about a lake like Leech Lake? Does it have Ciscos?
Leech Lake definitely has Ciscos, and it's interesting that the two parts of Leech are very different. Walker Bay is very deep, very clear. It has that characteristics where, you know, you keep that oxygen down deep. So it's critical to keep, you know, the water quality in Walker Bay good. And it's pretty good. The main body of Leech Lake is shallower, and those Cisco, and there are Cisco there, but they're more at the mercy of what the surface temperatures are, because when that water does completely mix, it will be the same temperature all the way to the bottom. So that's the kind of lake that can also get affected by climate warming, just pure temperature effects. And, you know, Leech Lake, as the tulibies in there are still pretty good shape. There are some ups and downs. As the climate warms, the main part of Leech Lake will become a concern.
Is there a way to identify some of these deep water, water lakes, say from photos or from Google Earth? I mean, is it possible? I'm a snorkeler and I'm always looking for clear water lakes. I'll drive great distances to swim in clear water lakes. And so I'm curious, is there a way to kind of look at a map or a, you know, a sky view of a Google view of Earth and pick out these lakes?
Yeah, there's an excellent one put out by the University of Minnesota called a lake browser. And you can actually link to it. A lot of people use the DNR's Lake Finder site, where you type in a lake name and a county. It gives you all kinds of information. When you do that, there will be a link available that will link you directly to University of Minnesota's lake browser. And they use satellites to estimate how clear a lake is. So it's really cool information. You can look up any lake in the state. They've got a really neat color code on how clear the lake is. So that would be a perfect tool for that kind of thing.
I am on time. I was writing notes as you were speaking. We'll get Heidi to put that up on our page so that people can go there and check that out. But that sounds really enticing. I'm thrilled. It's often been, I have talked to people like Rod and others of your ilk, I have been told that there are these lakes called perched lakes, which I suppose are, as I understand it, the highest lake in an area. Did they tend to be those clear water lakes? And I've also been told that the plant life and the whole aquatic environment is different on those lakes because they're sort of at the top of the drainage.
Yeah, they sure can be. The size of the watershed is critical. Small lakes, or I should say lakes with small watersheds that are forested, that are completely forested, have the absolute best water quality. And those are the lakes that Northern Waters Land Trust and other conservation organizations are targeting for some of their conservation efforts to keep those forested watersheds forested. And that'll ensure that excellent water quality that those lakes have, and ensure they have populations of sensitive fish like Cisco, and that'll make big walleyes and make the fishing continue to be good. So absolutely.
What can we do if we're, I don't live on one of those lakes, but what can we do as citizens to make sure that these lakes remain as they are now, pristine, I guess, is maybe too hopeful a word, but
no, it's not too hopeful. We have excellent lakes, and we can keep them that way. Citizens can get involved. They can get engaged, get to know your legislator, get to know your county commissioner, stress to them that the water quality in our lakes are special. This is a special treasure that we have, and we need to do everything we can to protect them.
I want to thank you, Pete. You've been very helpful in helping us to understand more about these wonderful lakes that we have. And to all of you, Annie and John, the work that you guys are doing to make sure that the lakes stay pristine. It's important. It's especially important to me because I am such a user of those lakes. I'm in there all the time.
Well, and I
not
think
for the fish.
Yeah, and I think, John, that's a really good point. When you do use a lake like that, when you swim or you snorkel, you understand how important water quality is. Getting out in the lake yourself, not just on a boat or that kind of thing, and that reminds us to be, you know, keeping these clear water lakes healthy. Anything else you guys want to add about the Northern Waters Land Trust and the work you're doing right now?
Heidi, the people always ask us, well, how do you know you're doing, how do you know you're preserving the right things? How do you know you're putting your resources in the right places? And the beautiful thing about the research that Pete has done is that it gives us a scientific basis upon which to make funding decisions and location decisions about where we put our limited resources. So this has just been a great boon. And we're in discussions right now to expand this kind of a strategy beyond Tuolumne Cisco Lakes to other, what we call lakes of high biological significance, which takes in a much larger scope of lakes that we'd also like to protect. So Pete really provided us with a great scientific background to attract more funding and engage more partners, local partners, lake associations, local governments to help in this effort.
We did just get a note from a listener asking if this conversation will be on our website. Indeed, it will later today. But Annie, can you point them in the right direction if they want to read more and find out more information?
Yeah, please visit our website, northernwaterslandtrust.org. We have a lot of great information about the conservation work that we're doing, or feel free to give us a call. Our phone number is 218-547-4510. We always love having conversations with people who are passionate about conservation.
Thanks so much, you guys. Good to talk to you, and we'll check in next month.
Yeah, thank you all for coming.
Thanks.